This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
First annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 11:01 a.m. Coming up, what's happening? We got Shahid Hamid, and he's got a live guest. We'll be taking your calls in a little bit. He'll tell you more all about it after I tell you that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, an institution dedicated to serving adult students by bringing a progressive perspective to educating the whole person. Listeners can learn about 23 bachelor's degree programs in the arts, business, and helping professions at the information session on Saturday, August 24th at 9 a.m. Details at merrillhurst.edu. Stay tuned for It Takes a Village with your host, Shahid Hamid.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid, and welcoming you to a special edition of It Takes a Village. Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes, Vice President of the Albina Ministerial Alliance, and we're going to be talking about topics for discussion, or our topics for discussion are the police reform and upcoming 50th anniversary of the 1964 Voting Rights Act, and other topics as well, okay, related to the African-American experience. And today we're inviting you to call with your questions and or comments, and so that what we're doing is inviting you to take part in the discussion as well. So stay with us. We'll begin our discussion in just a moment. Okay, I'd like to start by welcoming the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes, Vice President of the Albina Ministerial Alliance. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, thank you, my brother, for the invitation. I'm just happy to be here.
Well, we're certainly happy to have you back at these microphones, and we welcome you. Let's begin with police reform. Can you give us a kind of status update on where that is? I was noticing an article with the Reverend Mark Knudsen taking part in some questionings of just where we are with respect to that police reform and what you are doing with that.
Certainly, I can give a shelf status report. As you know, the recent report back to the federal judge was that the mediation between the city, the union, and the Department of Justice, and along with the Obama Minister Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform that I'm chairperson of, had come to a stall because of the police union contract agreement. And so the Federal Judge Simon has ruled that the process will start with a trial. And so there is probably a federal trial that will take place in the next 6 months that will look at some of the major issues. And so whether the mediation has failed, they will actually go to a federal trial in the suit that was brought by the Department of Justice towards the city in reference to the excessive and deadly force used, in particular with the mentally ill of the city. Along with that, we can say that there has been substantive progress between the Obama Minister Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform in the city and working towards more reform within the Portland Police Bureau. So that is the positive thing. Of course, eventually we feel that and since legally that we the agreement will go through the federal court and that the reform will be implemented.
Well, first of all, we want to thank those of you who are working with the Obama Ministerial Alliance for staying on top of this on this issue, because as most of our audience know, that there has been a lot of abuse on the part of the police department with the mentally ill and others, namely African Americans. So we certainly want to congratulate you for hanging in there, because it's no easy job bringing the police to account.
Well, we believe that with the Mayor Hills and the Portland Police Bureau move now towards implementing cultural transformation within the Portland Police Bureau, there moving in the right direction. So we are cautiously optimistic that we are that things will happen, but it always takes an advocacy push for the community to be monitoring and constantly pushing the political bureaucracy to make the necessary changes.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, making the changes. Over the years, the police has been resistant, particularly the police union. And I noticed that you mentioned something about their agreement and what they're going to allow to take place and what they're not going to allow to take place. I think that was the crux of that article. What part of their agreement do they refer to, or what part of their union contract they feel is being violated?
Well, as you know, that they are in the Portland Police Union in contract agreement negotiation, at least with the city at this time. Their contention in the lawsuit that the parts of the agreement is particularly, you know, reference to training, exercising, deadly force policies, and excessive force policy impact the union contract. And so that, and they believe from their perspective that they should be able to negotiate and approve everything before the agreement is concluded. And this is what the federal judge, Simon, will be ruling on in the next 6 months.
I want to remind our listeners or let our listeners know that they can call with their questions and or comments with respect to any of these subjects, any of these topics that we're going to be discussing, from police reform to the upcoming celebration or the upcoming march, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. And this is going to be taking place Saturday, August the 24th. And there'll be music and a march to South Waterfront Park, 10 a.m. at Terry Shrunk. Rally, speakers, music at 1 p.m. South Waterfront Park. So the Albina Ministry Alliance is the sponsor, one of the sponsors, and they're asking the sponsors, and what they're doing is honoring the historical march, the historic 1963 March on Washington. We have a call. Your question or comment, please. Hello?
Yes. I would like to, after the conversation, I hope you don't mind delayed in it.
You hope you don't mind what? I'm sorry?
I didn't mean to make you all delay. So I'm so grateful for your topic. It is so wonderful, the Ministerial Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And I have really kind of two questions. It's really kind of focused on our youth, but it does relate to the police.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't mind, I could just ask those two questions real quick.
Two questions. Okay, just long.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And it kind of is a paragraph with a question. I think one of the problems with youth, and this is all youth of all colors, is what are their jobs going to be? What future will they have? And so I just want to see what you think. One, there's only a few solutions I see besides the practical farming, but I think things like cob houses, I honestly think some of the police can't find a better job either. So it's kind of a funny take on the whole thing, but I thought I'd just start with that one question and see what you think, and then I have something more serious for crisis for our youth of all colors.
Okay. And thank you so much for that question and for those questions, because that's something that I was going to address in the second part of the program, because we celebrating the March on Washington, the 1963 March of Washington, when actually many of our youth are doing worse now than what they were doing back when the in 1963, particularly with respect to no jobs, a lot of the violence that's taking place, and as we've seen with the Trayvon Martin case, violence taking place by them and not necessarily by against them, and in cities like Chicago by them. So these are serious questions. Dr. Haynes, do you have any feelings or any?
Well, in a sense, I want to commend the pastors and the 1145 program that was a faith-based intervention program, gang violence, and they're doing an outstanding job as far as walking the parks, the major malls, and providing care team intervention groups with the gang families and those that are coming back out of prison. And so just a fantastic job. But as the caller said, one of the major issues is will be job opportunities. If our youth do not have opportunities to have a decent wage-paying job that can help with their families and others. You provide a door for other activities to come about, even taking individuals off of gangs. You need to deal with jobs. I remember when I was pastoring in Fort Worth and Texas, we pulled out a truce between the Crips and Blood that lasted pretty much about 6 months, but with the ultimate foundation of that truce has supposed to be that we were going to provide, the city was going to provide job opportunities and jobs, but that didn't happen, and the violence went back as it was previously. So she certainly has a major point that jobs and quality jobs has to be a part of any issue of dealing with gang violence, as well as issues of identity, self-esteem, and who we are as a people. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that the Trayvon Martin case brought about was the use of racial profiling, and I want to use that to get back to our police reform discussion for just a moment, because I don't think we finished with that. The police union and the gains that you said you've made in terms of a lot of the killings that were perpetrated upon by the police department, particularly of black youth, and what kind of advances had been made with respect to the mental health aspect to it? Are they going to allow now mental health specialists to ride along with the police, or be a part of any decision making apparatus when they have a call when they have a call that a mentally ill person is being confronted by the police? How are they going to work into this agreement?
Well, there are some things that are happening right now without the culmination of the suit filed by the Department of Justice in the area of mental health. Of course, one of those major things is in training of all the police officers, and then the other aspect of creating a special mental health teams of professionals, and then also of having a center that individuals can be taken to and get treatment. I think all of those are culmination, but what I think the main thing we're dealing with is the whole thing of the cultural violence, not only in the community, but cultural, where excessive and deadly force violence is also used by the professionals that whose job are to protect and to secure. And we saw that very clearly in the James Chassie case, and as well as in terms of the Aaron Campbell case. And the question becomes, how do we correct those issues and policies and training, and also how do we hold officers accountable when they violate those policies and training? And that's what the agreement of that suit by the Department of Justice is striving to get at.
Our number is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If you'd like to take part in any part of this discussion, we're going to talk about the march on revisiting the March on Washington 1964. And we'd like to have your opinion and about that.
Yeah, may I provide some kind of historical context?
Please
for that?
Do.
Okay. First of all, as early as 1941, the renounce civil rights leader A. Philip Randolph, who was the founder of one of the first black unions.
Pullman car race.
Sleeping porters. Sleeping porters. In 1941, during the coming out of the Depression, where sometime unemployment among blacks in major cities was 50% and overall 25% coming out of the Depression, it was A. Philip Randolph, along with other civil rights leaders, that demanded that President Roosevelt would create a policy that anti-discrimination policy for jobs and apprenticeships, and as well as allowing blacks to enter all services in the armed forces. And it was here that in 1941 that A. Philip Randolph threatened to bring 100,000 people to Washington. It was out of that response to that threat by the Roosevelt administration that many blacks during the World War II, that they received jobs. The migration of blacks from the South, many here in Portland, came up during that period of time. But because of the threat of that march of bringing 100,000 people to Washington, that opportunities opened up for jobs at the shipyards and other war facilities in order to have some basis of equality of job opportunities and with apprenticeship and other things. That happened in 1941. And the modern-day civil rights movement coming out of 1955 with the Rosa Parks and the Montgomery movement with the boycott on buses in Montgomery, that led eventually, after many sit-in demonstrations, Freedom Rides, and other things, to 1963 with the proposed by John F. Kennedy for the legislation of the 64 Civil Rights Bill to eliminate segregation laws and public accommodation in the 1965 Voting Rights Bill. It was the March on Washington at 1963 that pushed both Kennedy and Congress to pass those two pieces of legislation, the 64 Civil Rights, allowing blacks to be able to go to restaurants and to hotels and to ride buses. And all of those things open up because of that 64 bill. And then the right to vote, the 65 Voting Rights Act, you know, and just like what has taken place presently with the suppression of the vote, you had the suppression of the vote during the time of Jim Crow, with in terms of Mississippi, you had to quote the whole Constitution of Mississippi in order to vote, you know, and others. And this was also enforced by intimidation by the Klan, Ku Klux Klan, and a poll tax, all sort of measures that were given. The 65 Civil Rights Bill that was passed because of the pressure put on by the Civil Rights Movement and the March on Washington opened up that where in terms we have the present largest delegation of congressional representatives in the history of our people here in America, and that diversity began to open up opportunities for people. Now, the reason why this march is even more important is that the Supreme Court ruled it struck down the preclearance clause of that 64 amendment. That means that southern states and those states that were under that had to clear any changes in votings before they could make changes in their state law. Now, because of the Supreme Court decision, in a time when we're having states do voter suppression once again to eliminate black minority and students and many others from voting, we have to revisit that and go back to Congress and put more Congress pressure on Congress to begin to add a new part of that preclearance bill that Congress needs to pass urgently, because we saw immediately, as soon as the Supreme Court voted that down, North Carolina, Texas, and other began to implement voter suppression laws.
Much of what you've been saying, the statistics show, particularly for the march on Washington with respect to jobs by A. Philip Randolph and the congregation he said that he was going to bring with him. A lot of the statistics are worse now than they were then. Particularly when it comes to jobs for the youth, a lot of the youth now can't find work. And with the respect of the Voting Rights Act and Supreme Court decision to remove Title with the Title
Four Section Four
of this Voting Rights Act, do you think that we're kind of moving back to days of where the racism is a major issue, lack of voting and so forth, the ability to vote is once again put upon the African American, the inability to vote and register to vote?
You're hitting a point that shows the contemporary importance of not only commemorating those freedom fighters in the 63 March on Washington, which we want to do, but also awaken people and raising consciousness and mobilizing them that there are forces in our nation that actually want to turn the clock back. One of the senators, Ron Powell, said we need to also revisit the Civil Rights Bill on public accommodation, because it prevents private property owners from choosing who they want to come to their place of businesses and stuff like that. So we're under a siege right now, and both an attempt to turn back the clock on many of these gains that have been paid for in blood, sweat, and tears. People have died in the freedom movement for these laws. These laws have been paid for in blood, sweat, and tears, went to prison for. And so what we have to understand that we're under a siege right now. And can there be a turning back of the clock? Yes, it happened right in 1875 with the right after the Emancipation Proclamation, during the period of Reconstruction. We had PBS Pinchback, governor of Louisiana. We had two black senators. Many of the state legislatures had a majority of African Americans there. After the compromise, the Rutherford B. Hayes Compromise in 1875, and between 1875 and 1920, all of the congressmen except Oscar D. DePriest in Chicago were completely eliminated by laws, intimidations, black codes that were written to eliminate, and so black people were once again put into a new form of Jim Crow slavery that took place. And this can happen again if there's not the diligence and the consistent and the and the awareness and mobilization of people that there are forces that want to turn back the clock to state rights that have happened in the past, and those state rights to many of us in the freedom movement mean that there are codes that are sent out that we want to go back to what we used to have. And so we have to be vigilant about that.
I believe there is a perception that we're moving backwards, and whether it's real or imagined, it's there. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Shahid Hamid with a special edition of It Takes a Village, a 60-minute edition today. And if you have a question and or a comment, are we moving backwards? Give us a call at 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187 with your question and or comment. You know, when we look at the Supreme Court, this is the recent Supreme Court decision, as Dr. Haynes is mentioning, looking to kind of put us back in a situation where voting is not important for people to be ensured that they have the right to vote, and that making voting easy. Racial profiling with the police. Dr. Haynes and I talking a little bit about police reform here in Portland, and there's sometimes the union's resistance to make the kind of necessary changes that would be conducive for all people, whether you have mental health issues or not, to be taken into custody without excessive force and violence and so forth. So these issues are real. And I think when we look at the Trayvon Martin case, many folks feel that with the racial profiling being of such concern, that we're moving backwards. We're moving backwards, and we need some clarity with respect to an agenda, really, to address some of these issues. So, like, tell us a little bit about your march on. Now, your march, you're gonna have the. Tell us a little bit about what you're planning as well.
Well, the 1963 March on Washington commemoration. That's being held in several cities, but the main march will be in Washington, D.C. We'll try on the same date, on August the 24th. Now, we will have delegations going to D.C., but we believe that the majority of people will not be going to D.C., but we wanted to mobilize people here, first of all, to commemorate those freedom fighters that had brought us to the point of not only giving us civil rights, struggling, mm-hmm. but also in terms of changing the face of America, that we want to commemorate them for their sacrifice. But we also want to mobilize people and create a consciousness, awareness that there is an attack upon the civil rights statues and an attack upon the community to turn back into the old days of the past, where there's an attempt to take away these many gains that have been fought for, and people have died for, and people have been beaten for, and went to jail and prison for their attempts to take these gains back. And so what we want to do is to lift up not only the past issue. It's very important to know your history, because if you don't know the history, you will be doomed to the future.
Repeated,
yes. And so we want to do that, but we want to deal with issues of justice right now that are contemporary. Mm-hmm. Trayvon case, the mass incarceration, the inequity in the economic sphere of our economy. All of those issues, including police accountability, racial profiling, and the way we do that, marches are just a tactic to mobilize people and to increase their consciousness and towards a goal. And the goal has to always be in terms of justice, equality, equity, and also jobs. It is interesting, in 63, there were two points in the theme of the march, freedom and jobs. And then in 2013, we're still dealing with those issues of justice and jobs.
Absolutely.
Today.
President Obama, were our expectations, I mean, we have a black president now, and I don't know if he's able to do the things that he would like to do. We haven't seen a lot of significant proposals from the White House, but do you think that our expectations were too high when it comes to what he's able to do, and the Republicans are blocking ideas and legislation at every turn? He's currently on a speaking tour to try to get more support for the middle class. But he really hasn't done a lot for African American youth or African American proposal. What are your feelings? Do you think our expectations were too high for the president?
I think certainly there were high expectations, but I think we have to put it also in a context that. As a youth organizer during the Civil Rights Movement for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and also an organizer with SNCC, we did not believe actually that the country had changed enough to elect a black president. So that is historical significant. But at the same time, and we have to remember that President Barack Obama is a politician and not a prophet. You see, and there's a difference between President Obama and Martin Luther King or Malcolm X or any other. You know, he has done some significant things in terms of Obamacare and also is trying to get through Congress different economic programs. But we have to also remember that Congress, and it's particularly that House of Representatives, where all appropriation bills come, that also is a blockage to many of the things that the president have attempted to do. But I think that there was a kind of aura, just like there was when we passed the 64 Civil Rights Bill in 65. People felt that we had won, that we could sit down, and that we don't have to fight for civil rights anymore. That we were entering the post-racial age, the post-Obama age, and that those issues will no longer be an issue again. But what we discovered very quickly that racism came out of the surface by just having a black president, and the polarization that took place in the country. Who ever heard of asking a president for his birth certificate and for his college and high school records of it? And they didn't ask any president, either Republican or Democrat, for those kind of things, you know. And so there's a polarization during his office and tenure, that is because of significantly just being a black president. And we understand now that issues of racism and racial bias are still major issues in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. W.E.B. Du Bois said the great black sociologist is that the 20th century issues will be the issue of race, and we're still dealing with that. Those issues. Have we made substantive progress? Yes, in some things, but in some things we're going back with mass incarceration of African-American males. We have the issue of violence, of black-on-black violence that has taken place. The crucial issue of jobs, because jobs stabilize a family, good quality jobs, jobs help keep a family together, and those issues are crucial issues. And so that's why we have to get back into engagement, and this is one of the things this March on Washington is calling us to do, that we got to look at issues of racial profiling. We have to look at issues of staying your ground laws. We have to issue of voter suppression. We have to get back that Section 4 of the Voters' Rights, 65 Voters' Rights Bill. We have the issues of why is so little money going to the inner city for jobs and economic development. Those are kind of issues. Why there are so many black males in prison. Those are issues that we got to grapple with today, and they fall under the issues of justice and equity.
Mm-hmm. 503-231-8187 if you'd like to join the discussion I have with me, Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes, Vice President of the Albina Ministerial Alliance, and we're addressing the issue of police reform as well as the upcoming march on anniversary of the March on Washington and celebrations around that, and also the how much progress have we made when we look at are we returning to some of the situations that we fought to achieve in this country. When we look at a variety of issues, we have to ask ourselves the question, ask ourselves some hard questions these days. 503-231-8187 is the number, and if you'd like to chime in, please do. When we look at gerrymandering and redistricting on the part of as a part of the Republican strategy, what are our feelings about that, and a host of issues. When Dr. Haynes, when we look at the legacy of President Obama, he's entering his second term, or is finishing, he's in his second term, and usually a lot of time that's a place where the lame duck president really sits. When we look now in terms of has he done enough for African Americans, what would be his legacy in your mind?
First of all, I think that we have to contextualize everything. We have to remember that there would not be an Obama, President Obama, unless there was what the Civil Rights Movement, the 63 March on Washington. He is the fruit of what that struggle, that and those gains, those liberation. I once again I say that people paid a price, a very costly price. Being a member of SNCC during the 60s, we lost a lot of young sons and a lot of young daughters, and people were beating, people were killed for the right to vote, for public accommodations, you know. And so President Obama is an inherited that that created the opportunity in America for him to be there. Okay, and so that is a significant thing. But I do believe that there's more expectation of him, in particular, when it comes to economic equity, when it comes to issues of him using more the bully pulpit of lifting up those issues that are central to the inner city that impact the African-American population, those issues, primarily jobs, the issues of economic development. Those kind of issues are critical, and that there's an expectation in particular by all Americans, but more by African-Americans that we want a president to speak to those issues and also fight vigilant for those particular issues that will lift up the community, not only the black community, because when the African-American community has been lifted up, all communities have what? Improved, you know, in terms of economic development and also equity and jobs.
Okay. We have a call, Marie, from Hood River. Your question or comment?
Yes. Good morning, pastors. And excuse me, I felt kind of shy that I didn't ask a second question. Let me just go ahead and try that. It's regarding Oregon, all the ministers. Let me just try that second question, if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm.
When you all were just mentioning earlier about the terrible problem of prisons, I'm thinking about all the churches, all the pastors in Oregon and all the ecumenical groups that get together, what could be done with all the churches getting together. And then let me ask kind of like a little sub, it's kind of a sub-related question. It kind of illustrates what I mean. And here in Hood River, we have a group called Gorge Ecumenical Ministries. And they sometimes have, I believe they sometimes have pastors from both Oregon and Washington. We're right on the river, but I just want to illustrate this. Many years ago, something like 10 or 15 years ago, it was a time of very severe drought. So I was at one of the meetings, and I said, why don't we invite our Salado brothers, why don't we invite the Native Americans to come and be part of our prayer for rain, because that's so much part of the Native American tradition. It was kind of like breaking through the bonds of just strictly, specifically Christian, to broadening out to Native American spirituality. And in this case, what I feel like, wherever there's a crisis, we need everybody. We need all faiths. So I just want to see what you all think of that in terms of Oregon, and then in terms of working against this terrible prison problem, just even focusing on our Oregon prisons.
Thank you so much for that question, Dr. Haynes.
Yeah, I think she has a point there. In fact, as a former president of the Ecumenical Ministry of Oregon, that's part of what EMO has been doing, what is in terms of working with the tribes that are on the river, and has been those water issues as well. EMO has been central in bringing various faith communities together to bind together and to attack those issues. Anytime that we can unify people, even of various different faith traditions, together on common issues that impact us, it will always be more successful. This is the great aspect of the civil rights movement, is that it was able to bring people together of all races and faith traditions on the issue of Jim Crow segregation and freedom and justice and equality. And so this is one of the things that the whole March on Washington is about, as we celebrate what had happened in '63, but also mobilize people to engage the contemporary issues that we are facing today, the social revolution in America that started in 1776 and went to the Civil War, and then went, the third phase of that is the civil rights and post-civil rights movement continues to fight for justice, equality, and equity.
Now, the local march, the honoring of the historic 1963 march again on South Waterfront Park that will take place Saturday, August 24th. You're having sort of an ecumenical piece to that as well, isn't
it? Yes, certainly. We will meet at 10 a.m. at Traverse Front Plaza, and we will march to South Waterfront Park near the Hawthorne Bridge, where we will have a variety of speakers and music, and also conscious raising to deal with those many issues that we are faced with today. And this will be of ecumenical flavor of various faith traditions too that will be a part of this, as well as a variety of different diverse people.
Well, again, we commend you for your work, and we too believe that an ecumenical approach is necessary to conquer some of these issues, and that's really what It Takes a Village is all about. I was seeing, for example, we were seeing that during this Trayvon Martin case, a lot of folks forget that O.J. Simpson, who's just being offered parole, when his case was highlighted in the news, how when he was acquitted, Johnny Cochran used the law to acquit him, and a lot of folks, particularly white citizens, were upset, just like a lot of black citizens were upset when Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, who was just recently stopped for a traffic accident and still had his gun on the front seat, that we have to realize that really we really need to work ecumenically to really conquer some of these problems, because we're moving back to a racial divide, so to speak. And if we don't address some of the things that the March on Washington and Dr. Martin Luther King really symbolized, we can move back into polarization, as you mentioned. And so really that's a concern. We only have a few moments left. Again, are there any thoughts you'd like to leave with us, Dr. Haines?
Yes, I just would like to encourage individuals and families to come out to this. Many of the younger generation were not born during that time of being a part of this great freedom movement. And so it is an opportunity to want to commemorate those freedom fighters of freedom, justice, and equality. And so we invite you and encourage you to come and be a part of this. It will go from 10 into the afternoon, the 1963 March on Washington commemoration, as we look at and mobilize for the challenges of the coming years.
We have one other call. Lucinda from Portland, your question and or comment, please.
Hi. Yes. Hi, Dr. Haines.
Yes.
Lucinda Tate. How are you doing?
Doing well. It's good to hear your voice.
There are a couple of questions that I wanted to ask and then make a comment. The first question is, what is the status of the Citizens Review Board for the Police Accountability? That's one, because I haven't heard anything that's going on with that organization for quite a while. And then the other question real that quickly. I have is, well, comment then I'll make, is I think it's very important to remind everyone that this March on Washington and the one we're doing this March 24th is for everyone. It's for the silent majority to have an opportunity to get out.
Amen.
And show their support.
Yes.
So I want to make sure that everyone who is listening to this program reminds their neighbors and their family and friends that it is for everyone, because everyone is being affected by the various attacks on civil rights and on various types of oppression that is happening in the United States. It goes through all color barriers. So if you would, you know, emphasize that, I'd really appreciate it. And thank you, Reverend Haynes, for your longevity and for all the work that you do for us in Portland.
Yes, and bless you. But quickly in response to that, one, this is a march, as you say, is inclusive. It's for everyone. We invite everyone out, our races, faith, traditions. We invite youth and everyone else. So the first question is that the recent appointments to the Citizen Review Committee has taken place and is still active and ongoing. And so the commissioners have reappointed and also new appointments of individuals to that review committee. So it's still going on, and there should be more information put out on that.
Okay, Dr. Haynes. Just before we leave, your optimism with respect to police reform here locally. You say you're optimistic about, how optimistic are you that accommodations can be achieved with the union, with the support of politicians and the city council and the mayor? How optimistic are you that these changes can take place?
I'm cautiously optimistic, and I mean in terms that in this kind of dynamics, there's always backward and forward movement. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that substantive change will take place in the Portland Police Bureau. But it always requires monitoring by the citizenry if we're going to have democratic reform of the Portland Police Bureau. It's not something that just happened out of night. People have been struggling on this issue for many years, and the struggle continues. But even once the agreement is reached, it still has to have monitoring to take place and people watching and holding the Portland Police Bureau accountable.
Okay, great. So we want to thank Dr. Haynes for, as one caller mentioned, for his dedication to these issues and his continued leadership with respect to these issues. I'm Shahid Hamid, and this has been It Takes a Village. We heard the first Friday of every month, and we want to thank you, the listeners of KBOO, for your continued support and your participation in this radio station and in the workings of this radio station. Until next time, Dr. Haynes, thank you so much for your time and taking time out of your schedule. And we certainly hope to be there.
Thank you.
August the 24th,
yes.
Saturday at 10 a.m. at the Terry Shrunk Plaza, and at 1 p.m. in the South Waterfront Park to commemorate the historic March on Washington. Until next time. Thank you so much. And to my audience, peace and love. Until next time, we're out.
Tune in to Plugged In every first and third Fridays from 10 p.m. to midnight with host DJ Tronic. Tronic does a live mix in the studio featuring the latest in house, techno, tech house, breaks, dubstep, and more. Tronic also has guest DJs in the studio and often talks about upcoming parties, club nights, and more. That's Plugged In every first and third Fridays at 10 p.m. only on KBOO Portland.
Pickathon is an innovative music experience happening from Friday, August 2nd through Sunday, August 4th, just outside of Portland at the beautiful Pendarvis Farm. This one-of-a-kind weekend of music, food, and community features performing artists Sharon Van Etten, The Devil Makes Three, Sally Ford and The Sound Outside, The Foghorn String Band, and many, many more. Information about tickets, camping, and other performers can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Friday, August 2nd. E. coli in the news today. First, officials closed Kleinland Park in Vancouver, Washington, to swimmers because of elevated levels of bacteria. Salmon Creek Regional Park and the water features do remain open. In Kansas, beef producer the National Beef Packing Company has recalled 22,000 pounds of beef that could be contaminated with E. coli. None of the beef has made its way to Oregon. A jury convicted former Goldman Sachs trader Fabrice Terror of civil securities fraud. The practice of trading packages of people's mortgages called collateralized debt obligations, or more commonly known as Franken mortgages, to their clients, knowing that they were going to fail, and then collecting even further when they did fail in an elaborate hedge fund scheme. It is not likely that Terror will face jail time. In a move that pleased Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the United States House of Representatives voted to increase sanctions against Iran. The vote won by 400 votes yesterday. Local Representative Earl Blumenauer voted no, as did only 19 others. Sanctions in place by the European Union and the United States have already reduced Iran's oil production to half of her capabilities. The new sanctions penalize U.S. trade partners for not finding alternative sources for oil and market trading with Iran. China already dropped Iranian oil consumption by 21% last year. Congress's hardline